Good evening. This is Tuesday Topics, and I'm Paul Edwards in Miami, Florida. Thank you very much for joining us tonight, and thank you to Debbie and Rachel and Nama, who are our recording folks tonight. Also, of course, thank you to George Byes from Talking Communities, who made this software available to us and who, in fact, has just made a brand new version available to us, version 4 of the Talking Communities software. So we are very pleased to have that up and running, and are also very pleased about the topic that we're going to discuss tonight. And I want to talk a bit about ground rules. The object of tonight's program, as I see it, and as it was designed last week, is to find out a little bit about the kinds of transportation options that blind folk have, how much they use them, how little they use them, why they're good, why they're bad, how they differ from place to place, not only within the United States, but from country to country. And the objective is to try to get a picture of what some of the options for transportation are, both in the United States and elsewhere, so that we can get an idea of perhaps some things that we can lobby for, legislate for, and look for in the United States, perhaps, or in other countries, based on what we have here. The objective is not to get into so much detail about our particular paratransit system that what we end up getting involved with is kind of a bitch session, because we don't need that, I don't want that, and I don't think our listeners much care how late the guys are picking you up. And I only raise that issue because every time we discuss transportation, whether it's on Tuesday Topics or at a convention, or any time, it seems to degenerate into how bad my particular paratransit system is and what can I do to make it better, which is fine, except that most people don't do anything to make it better once they find out. Anyway, the object tonight is just to explore various transportation options, look at which are best, look at which are not, look at what are good, look at what are bad, and look at what might just be different. So, those are the rules. And now, let's see who wants to kick it off by describing the transportation system in the community where you live.
This is Nama from Israel. As far as the public transportation goes, we do get free city bus travel and half fare on intercity. We do get free train travel. Absolutely free anywhere in the country. And we don't get any kind of discount on cabs or taxis or stuff like that, which is unfortunate. But what we do get is, which is kind of insignificant, but still it's something. When we call a cab station to order a cab, we get charged what's called a phone fee or a calling fee. That means you get charged something equivalent to a dollar for the fact that they have to drive out to you especially and pick you up, and that's waived because we can't just hail a cab on the road.
This is Dave Williams from the UK, and I would guess that my situation is fairly typical of most people living outside of any of the major cities in the UK. Essentially, from home, I have a number of transportation options. I can either call a cab, as Nama just described, and there aren't any discounts, as far as I'm aware, available to me if I wish to use a cab. And obviously, a taxi, the beneficial thing about that is, of course, it'll come right to your door and take you right to your destination. So it's certainly the most convenient option, but it's definitely the most expensive option. One advantage to using a cab, other than its immediate convenience, is there is a certain security, a rapport with a reputable taxi company. Then the likelihood is that their drivers are going to know you, they're going to know that you're blind, and so they'll make the extra effort to come and find you, instead of just pulling up, and if they don't see you right away, then disappear without the fare. And believe me, stranger things have happened. Other transportation options from where I live include the bus, and I quite like going on the bus. although it's less convenient than cabs because obviously it only takes you to a limited number of destinations, and I can get the bus from about 2 minutes away from my home. I walk with my cane to the bus stop and then stand at the bus stop with my cane and the bus stops. Now, in my area, and it is a bit of a postcode lottery, in my area, if I want to get the bus, I can get a pass for the bus, which means that every fare, regardless of the distance I'm going to be travelling, will cost me £1, so that's about $1.75. Typically, bus fares aren't much more than a pound, so I don't feel that it's necessary for me at this stage of my life to have a bus pass, although in the past I have had one and I may have one in the future. Again, I understand that in some areas in the UK you can actually get free bus travel, and you'd simply you have a pass or a card that you would show to the bus driver. And finally, the third mode of transport, I guess, that's available from where I live is a train. However, I have to get from my home to the train station, and the train station is about 3 or 4 miles away, so I can either get a couple of buses or I can get a cab to get me to the train station. But once I get to the train station, then I've pretty much got the whole of the UK's rail network at my disposal, and you can apply for a disabled person's rail card, and you pay, I think, somewhere in the region of £15 to £20 for that. So that's somewhere in the region of $25 to $35. And essentially, you get a third off your train fare. And that's pretty standard with any type of rail card. So in terms of having extra provision for me as someone with a disability, in terms of the public transport, the bus pass really is the only example I can think of here where there's a, you know, where I get something that perhaps a sighted person wouldn't. You know, I guess you get used to what you know. I don't really have any major axe to grind in terms of the transportation that's available to me, although I understand that in many parts of the US the access to transportation is much, much more difficult, and I'd be interested in hearing some of the stories that other people have.
This is Alice Richard, and I'm in Brunswick, Georgia, and the only transportation we currently have in Brunswick are taxi cabs. And you get no breaks or anything as far as with disability, so you just pay whatever the fare is. Now, there are three major cab companies, and they kind of do compete as far as prices, so of course I always pick the one that offers the better rate. I do know, though, that here in Brunswick, or and not just Brunswick, but in 13 counties here in the Southeast region, the DHR has formed a committee, and they're looking into taking all the vehicles such as TANF, Medicaid, and looking at coordinating those services and making those services not just available to clients but to the general public. And that's just something that we've just started working on, so I'm kind of anxious to see and hopeful that it'll take off. Of course, we do have Greyhound here, not as good a service as we did have, but it runs at least 3 times a day in and out of Brunswick, so that's which is the easiest way sometimes for me to get to Savannah or even into Jacksonville. And sometimes with that, of course, you know, they do offer special deals where somebody can ride with you for free, you know, 2 for 1, or that you can get a discount if you order your tickets 7 days out in advance, which I do. Since I don't like to fly, of course, most of the places, even when I go to Atlanta, I will take Greyhound and just take advantage of the special rates they have.
The Greyhound situation is interesting because it often gets used for what Greyhound didn't intend it for. The two-for-one rule, when it was introduced, on the assumption that these poor disabled people would have someone, a caregiver, who would go with them and look after them while they were bopping along to where they were going. And most of the time now, I think, blind people actually don't use the two-for-one rule that way, and instead, very often, two blind people travel together and essentially are able to therefore travel for half price. There is one other large competing bus company in the country, in the intercity country business, and that bus company is called Trailways. Alice, does Trailways offer the same sort of discounts? It seems to me they don't.
Actually, Trailways was bought out by Greyhound. So even though some of them still have their name, they are Greyhound buses now. So there is really no Trailways anymore. The other thing is they don't just offer, it's interesting because they don't just offer the 2-for-1 fare to disabled anymore. They actually even do that as an incentive to anybody, and that's something fairly new.
Good evening. This is Julian from Montreal. Here, as far as I know, the disabled person pays all the time, everywhere, full rate. It's only the, as Paul said a while ago, the caregiver that does not pay. So if a blind person wants to travel by himself, he has to pay the full rate for either the subway, the buses, the train, whatever.
This is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. We here in Lansing, they have something called SpecTran. It's our form of paratransit. Of course, we also have the Capital Area Transit Association, which is CATA. And I haven't ridden the bus in a while. I think it might be a dollar now, but I used to ride the bus, and then they rerouted it, so I started going with the SpecTran. But our rides are $2 up, one way, so we take, if you're returning, you have another $2, or you can get a pass, a $20 pass that you can have, that a punch pass that 20 punches on it, or whatever. Well, it would be 10, I guess.
My name is Nicole Ugas, and I'm in Orlando, and my means of transportation, both in the area of Orlando and now out of area, is now MV Transportation, my local paratransit provider.
This is Rachel in Orlando, and as Nicole said, we do have the paratransit system, but as far as public transportation, our main means of transportation would be taxis or buses. And a lot of routes, you can either take a bus route to a specific bus stop and then catch another route, or go to the terminal, the bus terminal downtown, and catch another route from there. The other transportation that's available is what they call limo, which is downtown, and it takes you to just some of the very downtown locations. It doesn't travel very far. It's just for travel within the downtown area. They have talked about a light rail system at one point, off and on. Actually, they've been talking about that, and it's been shot down so far. And that light rail system was to go between the Orlando area and some of the other cities, Tampa, and mainly because we are a tourist town, it was thought that would help out with the traffic problems that we have in the area. But so far, that's not going to happen.
Good morning. This is Jeff Shang from Brisbane in Australia. Before I go to talking about our system, I want someone to explain this term paratransit to me, because I've heard it several times today and in the past, and I don't know what it means.
Well, Jeff, complementary paratransit, as it's called in the Americans with Disabilities Act, means transportation provided as a supplement to or an alternative to regularly offered public transportation system. And the para stands for parallel. What it typically means is transportation which is specifically designed for the use of people who, for whatever reason, cannot use the regular bus system. This often includes lift-equipped vans, sometimes includes cars and other vehicles, but the whole point is that service is door-to-door, usually. There are a few places that are experimenting with some other approaches, and perhaps we'll get into those, but for the most part, the service is door-to-door, which means that you get picked up at home and get dropped to where you want to go. It is a multi-load system, which means that you will often be picked up in a vehicle that will then pick up three or four other people before you get dropped off. So that is the definition of paratransit, and I hope it helps, sir.
Jeff, I'm wondering, can you describe for people the voucher system which you guys have in Australia? Because that was something that I'd never seen before, and I was quite intrigued by it.
And I'd be interested to know more about this paratransit, because to me the idea of having a separate transport system would sounds like there would be... like, I can't imagine it working too well, at least in some cases. But anyway, being in Brisbane, we can describe the transport system here in Brisbane and in Australia generally, I guess, and I've got Amanda here as well, so I assume she'll chip in. What Dave was talking about with regard to taxis is that in Australia we have, we as a general rule don't have a paratransit system. There are some special things set up for specific purposes, but as a general rule, the emphasis has been on integrating the needs of people with disabilities into the regular transport system, which I suppose you like what you know, but it seemed to me to be a much more sensible approach because of the economies of scale and all that sort of thing. What we have for taxis is that... I think that this is the case universally throughout the country now, because it used not to be. The system is that you get a half-price concession up to a certain amount for taxi fares. And in Queensland, which is our state, and in several other states, this is administered through a book of vouchers that you receive. And basically, you, at the end of your fare, if... you give the driver a voucher that you've signed, and there's an opening on the cover of the book to facilitate easy signing, which is a good innovation. And basically then you only owe the driver half of the metered fare. And it's currently the case in Queensland, I believe, that your concession is up to half of a $50 fare. So if you have a $60 fare, then you get a $25 concession, and you have to pay the difference.
That's right.
And when the book is running low, there is a reorder form in there, because it's obviously meant for not just blind people, but you can also ring up and place an order for a new book. I know that in New South Wales they have vouchers as well. In Victoria they use a card system, and I'm not sure about the other states. It's also possible, if you're travelling interstate, to get vouchers specially for that state, so that you know, there's a reciprocal kind of arrangement. You do run into the problem, though, sometimes that some drivers don't know what they are and won't take them. We also have a pass system for train, buses and services like ferries and city cats and so on. This is mainly for travel within a city. And basically the arrangement is that you get to go for free, and that's really quite a generous concession, particularly if you live on or near a bus or train route. You have a pass, and in theory you get asked to see that pass by the you know, a ticket guard at the train station or by the bus driver, but often you don't even get asked. Because I guess they just assume that you have it. In Queensland, this is a fairly new thing. Up until about 4 years ago, they had this ridiculous system where a blind person was entitled to a free train ticket, but they had to get one, which meant that if you were at a train station that wasn't staffed or wasn't staffed after a certain time, then technically you were in breach of regulations. People weren't very often called on this. And certainly if you were going to a station where you were going to get caught, you could pick up the free ticket at the other end, but it seemed rather silly. So now we have a pass, and this is actually falling into line with a lot of the rest of the country, and they've finally gotten organised where passes are now recognised in the, each of the states. So we have a national pass system.
I suppose the one thing to note about the passes, though, at least in Queensland, is that they used to be just a pass for bus travel before that, and that allowed you to have a guide with you as well. and they could travel for free also. But with the travel passes, nobody else is covered. It's just the blind person.
And with it, I heard that the city council bus passes were going to be withdrawn, but was that, did they actually go through with that?
I think so. Well, they're not giving any new ones out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You also, as blind people, receive a benefit that is recognised as being a pension. We're also eligible for pensioner concessions, which can affect the cost of, private bus services and so on to get to various places. So Amanda and I went down to northern New South Wales a few weeks ago, and we were able to get pension affairs for that. And also, with our pension card that arrives each year, we get, is it two vouchers or four?
Four.
I think there are four one-way vouchers,
yeah,
four trips within the state, I think it is, and it's only a $5 trip. So if I wanted to get the train up to Bundaberg or even up to Cairns, each would only cost me $5 in each direction, and that so represents a considerable distance. The only other issue I would bring up with in terms of transport is air travel. I bring this up mainly because it's a bit of an issue at the moment. There is, or at least was, and I think there might still be with one of the airlines, an arrangement where you can get half price of a full fare economy ticket. But as we all know, anyone who's travelled, it's quite easy to avoid paying a full economy fare by getting a deal, and you often can do better than half of a full-priced economy air ticket anyway. The thing that's worth noting, though, is that in terms of meat and assist and so on, some airlines are bringing in self-check-in and things like that, and we're very concerned about the ability for blind people to be able to be met for their meet and assist if people are being expected to check in themselves. And also taxi drivers are finding it difficult to pull up and actually take people inside the terminal because of new security restrictions. Basically, the airports have been privatised now, and we're starting to run into problems in that area. And certainly there have been situations in recent months where people who are doing domestic travel have organised a meet and assist and they haven't shown up, and they've been sitting in the airport while their plane's taken off. So that's starting to become a real problem, and so that's being looked at now by Blind Citizens Australia. And the only other issue I would raise there too is that one of our budget airlines has got a somewhat vague or vaguely worded policy to do in terms of assistance. Certainly the last time I looked at it, it seemed to suggest that they would assist blind people with guide dogs but not blind people without them. My feeling on it is that someone's tried to cover all the bases in terms of assistance and has fallen short. And also the policy doesn't seem to quite match what actually happens in practice. My understanding is that people travelling with the airline really haven't had too much trouble.
This is Alice Richard, and I just had a question about your voucher program. Is there a limit to the number of vouchers you receive, and do you have to pay for the vouchers too up front, or are those actually just given out, and how is that decided as far as how many you get?
Okay, let Jeff answer that question, and I have another one for him. Are the free transit on the public transportation and the free trains and so on subsidized by either local city councils or the state government or the federal government, or do the private companies in fact offer these discounts out of the goodness of their heart?
For taxis, no, there is no limit to how many you can have. You don't have to pay for them in any way. It's something that's organised through our state government, through the Department of Transport, and so you can just call them up and tell them that you need another book of vouchers, and they'll just send them out, and they don't have limits about how often you ask.
You get them in books of 50. Of course, you have to go through a bit of rigmarole to get onto the service in the first place. You've got to fill out paperwork and so on, but it's not too bad. And they do monitor Basically, the cab operator needs to send in the vouchers in order to get their money back. They do monitor the scheme. I've heard of people occasionally being rung up and said, did you take such and such a trip on such and such a date?
Mm.
There is some room for fraud, but not everyone gets away with it, so that's a good thing.
Trains and buses and all of that sort of thing.
I'm not quite sure how the main public transport concessions are funded, like who pays for it. I don't really know. There must be some, if there is any kind of compensation, it must be done in some kind of blanket fashion, because there's no need for a blind person to register that they've done the trip. You can just walk onto the train, go where you're going, and then walk off again. You don't have to swipe your pass or anything like that.
The ones that are run by the government are obviously paid for by the government. The private ones are, because it's completely at their own discretion, then nobody else picks up the rest of the costs. And it's not just blind people who are entitled to those concessions either.
Any pensioner concession that's offered just to pensioners generally is obviously offered by the company, and also, as Amanda said earlier, if a private company chooses to honour the pass, then that's again at their discretion. When I was in studying in Lismore, the buses there were run by a private company, and they decided that they would honour the New South Wales travel pass for travel on their bus network within Lismore, even though they weren't required to.
For those in the States, Meet and Assist in Australia is sort of interesting. We're accustomed to a certain model in the U.S., and that model is typically that we are the first people on the plane and the last people off the plane, and that Meet and Assist is kind of a crapshoot in that while they'll generally get you off the plane, that will often mean that you will only get to the gate area, and then getting out to the front of the terminal becomes another whole issue. In Australia, when I was there, when I traveled, I was absolutely amazed by the fact that very often I was the first person off the plane, and very often I got to get my passport stuff done and my luggage inspected before anybody else did coming into the country. And then traveling around the country, I found that, again, I actually got places faster than most of the people who were traveling because of the Meet and Assist, which is absolutely unheard of in terms of the U.S. air travel. Jeff, paratransit is difficult to understand, and for other people who may be having trouble with it, let me provide just a smidge of background so that people understand where it comes from. When Section 504 of the Rehab Act was passed and we began to see the emergence of public transit systems that would include lift-equipped buses, it began to be clear that having lift-equipped buses wasn't the panacea that all the folks in wheelchairs suggested that it would be. And that's because it does no good to have cool lift-equipped buses that you can get on and off if, in fact, most of the bus stops where the bus stops are places where a person in a wheelchair can't go anywhere from there. And so, as a result, the idea of paratransit was born. And that's why it's called complementary with an E. And complementary here really meaning supplementary, and only to exist, in theory, until the regular public transit system is fully and appropriately accessible to all people who use it. So the paratransit system is actually a cost that is borne by local communities who have public transportation systems. If they don't have a public transportation system, then they're not obliged to have a paratransit system. If they do have a paratransit system, that paratransit system is only required to operate for as long as that public transportation system operates. And each paratransit system, for the most part, makes its own rules. And that means that there is immense variation throughout the states of who gets access to paratransit systems, what the rules are in terms of how often you have to make reservations, whether there are limits to the kinds of trips you can make reservations for, and so on. So the paratransit system, while it looks like a good deal, really is not. The other issue is with the high cost of gas and with a range of other things, paratransit is probably coming very close to being at a point where it will price itself out of the market. In the particular county where I live, our local government is spending close to $35 million a year of its money to provide the paratransit system, which here is currently running 5,000 trips a day or more. And while each passenger only pays $2.50, that ride, I don't remember the exact figures, but these are approximate. An ambulatory ride under the new contract will probably cost close to $30. And if you're using a wheelchair, that will cost close to $40 that the county will pay for each of those trips. So you're paying $5, but the county is paying $80 to get you where you're going and back each day. So it's a fairly large subsidy, and it means that paratransit is somewhat controversial. So that's just a little bit more background on paratransit. I know that Julien from Montreal and Timothy Appleby are here from Canada. Before it gets too late, can you guys tell us about any special concessions that might exist in Canada or in your local communities for transportation for folks who are blind or visually impaired?
In Montreal, Quebec, Canada, we have a paratransit. They use a lot of taxis and special buses. I myself tried to get in there. Make an inquiry and so forth, and they rejected me about 10 years ago by saying that apparently I was clever enough to travel by myself on the regular system with a white cane. I told them that I didn't know what intelligence or cleverness had to do with moving into the one of the subway stations where four lines get together. It's a very, very big station, and even sighted people, normal people, I mean, not handicapped people, get lost sometimes. They have to ask their way. But it was no, and I kept traveling by myself until some four or five years ago, where little sight I had kind of went, and now I travel. My wife gets me to work in the morning, and I come back by cab in the evening.
This is Allison. In the United States, when they started paratransit, the idea was it would be short-term while they did get public transit, the fixed routes, the regular buses, up to snuff so people in wheelchairs could access them. But what happened was because of the cost of what it costs, the government keeps putting more and more money into paratransit, and then there was quote-unquote supposedly no money to go into the fixed routes, so you know we're no better off than what we were in a lot of places, because there was then quote-unquote no money to go ahead and put in curb cuts or make bus stops accessible and that kind of thing. So, you know, therefore there's still a lot of people that can't even access public transit. So,
yeah, it would seem to be that that kind of system would be fairly unsustainable, which is kind of what I was thinking, because you don't have the economies of scale, and like Alice just alluded to, can't see why why a regular public transport system would improve itself if it didn't feel that there was a need to. Going back to Paul's comments, meet and assist on aircraft, it sounds like, as a general rule, the only people who are likely to give you assistance to the state are the actual flight crew, the people on the plane. In Australia, what's supposed to happen is that you will be dealt with by three groups of people, and usually it will be one person from each. the ground crew at your departing airport, the flight crew, and the ground crew at your destination. And I found this has generally been the case in countries other than Australia as well. So maybe the US, again, is a bit of an exception. But I'd be interested to hear what Amanda thinks on this, but I found that perhaps getting off the plane first is, you may have got lucky there, Paul.
I think so.
Or was wearing the right coloured tie or something, because it's generally not my experience. I think maybe once or twice I've been taken off the plane first. Certainly because you're with a ground staff, it's not unusual to do a bit of dodging around and getting through quicker once you're in the terminal. But it's usually my experience that as a blind person, you're usually the first person on and the last person off.
Yes, mine too.
Which can have its advantages. Certainly, if the ground staff are not having to worry about the rest of the people, then you and the ground staff member can walk through fairly easily. And in terms of the interchange between these three crews, they actually physically hand you across from one to the other. So when you're getting off the plane, the ground crew won't decide that they've dealt with you until the person from the ground has arrived and basically taken you from them. So that's a good thing.
You know, that's always been my experience in the US too, although not as reliably in LAX, but yeah.
That's interesting. So maybe it varies a bit within the states. In terms of regular public transport, look, the more I've tried to understand the ADA, the more problematic I've found it, so I won't even go there. But in Australia, with our Disability Discrimination Act, it's basically all about eliminating discrimination, which might sound obvious, but it seems to be taking a different approach than some other places, including the United States. And one thing that they've done in the legislation is made a provision to develop standards, which basically say this is the standard to make such and such an area or activity accessible. If you meet the standard, then you're in compliance with the Act. If you don't, then you aren't. This has the advantage of making it easier to bring complaints, because you don't have to prove discrimination, you just have to prove non-compliance with the standard. But it also makes it easier for service providers, because it then quantifies what constitutes equal access. So they also know that if they do adhere to the standard, then they will be in compliance. So it works for everybody. And the reason why I mention this is the first DDA standard, we have two of them now and a third one on the way, but the first one to come into law, which was a few years ago now, is the transport standard. Basically, there's, I think it's 20 years for basically everything to become accessible, but new services have to be accessible from the start, or have a very good reason not to be, in which case they can seek exemption from the standards for a period of time while they can get their house in order. And this basically means that not having gone down the paratransit route, I don't think we ever will, because now the emphasis is very much on getting the regular transport system accessible. So you're looking at things like accessible buses, making sure that bus stops can be reached in wheelchairs, making sure that travel on train platforms is safe and possible for not just people in wheelchairs, but for people who are blind, so that there's adequate tiling to indicate where the edge of the platform is and all that sort of thing. I think there's also as parts in the standards to do with availability of information in various formats. And the standards were developed by consultations between the Human Rights Commission, with the government, with the transport providers and the disability community. And it took many years to develop them, and there were regulatory impact statements and all that sort of stuff that had to be gone through before they became law. It took quite some time, but it I think it may have taken about 7 or 8 years to get from start to finish, but they did do it, and everyone, as a general rule, is happy with how it's gone, and they're up for review in 2007. So that, I think, is a really positive thing.
I have another question for you, Jeff and Amanda. We do have some accessible cabs in certain places here in the States, but they tend to charge those people a little more, again, probably because of the cost, because of the lift and that. So I'm just curious, is the cab fare the same and the vouchers the same for the lift taxis, you know, the accessible cabs, as they are, you know, for your cabs that are just your ambulatory cabs?
Just a couple of quick things before I let them answer your question. First, Gary, yeah, as Alice said, there are accessible taxis in a number of areas. And Alice, it varies as well. There has been a real push in Miami-Dade County to get some more accessible taxis out there. And it is actually against the law for them to charge more money for an accessible cab than it is for a regular one. Cab voucher systems are not unknown in the U.S. I know that in the state of Oklahoma, that is the primary way that transportation for folks who are blind is subsidized. And actually, to me, it would make a lot more sense for, say, Miami-Dade County and some of the other folks who are spending an inordinate amount of money on transit systems to take a look at the taxi voucher system, which is clearly going to be cheaper to administer and cost the county a lot less than the paratransit system with all of its infrastructural needs and elements would and does.
I believe here in the States another system, this is Jesus again, that works on something with vouchers, although that is, I believe, run by ACB of Mississippi, is in Jackson, Mississippi, and I don't know if they do it in the rest of the state. I know I was speaking with one of the members from Mississippi over our convention and before then about that. I want to make one other statement vis-a-vis someone said earlier paratransit funding took some funds away from fixed route, and that may be true in the smaller communities, certainly, that have a fixed route system. My opinion is that it is certainly not true for the big cities such as Miami, Houston, L.A., and I can go on for what I said earlier, the Sun Belt cities. The main reason the fixed route systems, the public transit system in these cities are in the shape they are is because the voters, in their infinite wisdom, elected not to spend money on public transit and instead refused every time the issue came up for any kind of a vote to take the money and spend it on highways, which is why in Miami, for example, there are sections of I-95, which is our main interstate that runs through the city, and other highways that are 12 lanes wide and still end up with gridlock from 7 in the morning till 7 at night. So really, paratransit is a monster, as I said earlier, that the transit authorities don't want let loose, but it really has very little to do or has had very little to do up until now with the fact that it takes money away from the fixed routes. It really does not. It's just that it adds on to money that they do not want to spend on any kind of public transit. They would prefer to spend that money on highways.
Okay, this is Amanda. Accessible taxis don't cost anybody anymore. They're the same price, and in fact, people using wheelchairs are eligible for the same half-price taxi subsidy scheme that we are. So it tends to be half-price for them. But the vehicles that are used for accessible taxis are kind of small vans so that other people can ask for a taxi that will seat, I think it's something like 9 people, and it will cost them more to do that. But the other thing that I should say about the accessible taxi system is that it's far from perfect, and I know that even in capital cities there are still people waiting for a very long time for their taxi to arrive, and even if they do book it in advance, and that's if it turns up at all.
Oh, well, I have to wait on a regular cab on a long time basis. Paul, what I was going to, first of all, I wanted to respond to you. It's interesting here in Georgia because the only place currently where we do have accessible taxis is in Augusta, and I just know that they were, and I'm sure if it were checked into, probably it was illegal what they were doing, but they were charging them $2 more than what they would charge somebody else as far as if it were a regular cab coming. So that was an issue. Now to the vouchers. I do know that in Montana they have voucher programs. In fact, here in Georgia we received grant money from Montana one time, and we had a voucher system here in the Southeast, and we're actually able to get 5310 money to help with those vouchers. My understanding is that program is, again, about to start out back up. It was through one of the independent living centers I was working for in Savannah that we did the voucher program. And my understanding is they are in the process of getting some county block grant money, in fact, even too, to start it back up. And in Mississippi, I do know that when we did ours, they fact the people from the Mississippi Research Center, you know, for the blind there, actually came and looked at our model. So that's good to hear that they actually did start something in Mississippi as well. And I also know that they have a voucher program that's pretty successful in Missouri as well.
Excellent. So we're beginning to have a picture. Let me summarize a little bit of what we know. In Israel, there isn't, to any large degree that we know of, a paratransit system. There is a public transit system that appears to run frequently, if not always, safely. In Canada, we don't know an awful lot about what options are available there, but when I was there, I think that for the most part, there are the only paratransit systems that there are those that are set up by private entities. Footnote one of the things that's happened in a few places in this country is a group of blind people has actually gotten together and formed a transportation co-op, and then made arrangements with 2 or 3 cab drivers to guarantee X number of trips per week if they will provide a 25% or 30% discount. And it makes sense for the taxi company to do it, and it makes sense for blind folks to do it because they're actually building a system of transportation that's going to continue to exist, whether RSA and ICE-T, which are acronyms for two of the laws that are currently hanging around in the legislation for those out of this country, actually do pass. I think the other thing that we found is that there's an immense difference from community to community, even within the state of Florida, in terms of the way that paratransit and public transit work, as to whether passes are free, as to whether they're not, as to whether it's easy to get visitors' permits, as it seems to be in Australia, or whether it's not. So very different systems. I don't know how easy it's going to be, but let's try this anyway. We said at the beginning of the program that we were going to talk about the pros and cons of the two systems, or of the various systems that are out there. So if someone would like to take the ball and run with it, let's talk a little bit about what we think the advantages and the disadvantages of the various sorts of transportation that we have. So we have paratransit, we have cabs, we have public transportation. Let's for the most part stick to those three, and let's call public transportation trains, buses, and ferries altogether. So who wants to jump into that one?
Okay, public transportation, there's none of that here in Kingwood. And they since this paratransit does not only go for fixed price buses, I can't even get that out here either. So that's my comment.
I would say probably the pros to the cabs are the fact that, and even with paratransit, in the sense that it is door to door, curb to curb, however you want to look at it. To me, that's a plus, especially if I'm going somewhere where I'm not familiar with that area as a blind person. It's just it's easier that way to get around. Unfortunately, the con to that is it is expensive. However, then a pro again, which we've seen from Jeff and Amanda, is with vouchers, it could become something that's feasible, especially when you think about the rural areas like where I'm at, where it is harder for people to get around. And I'm not just talking about people with disabilities and people who are blind, but even people who can't afford vehicles. So to me, that's why I see cabs as possibly being a pro thing, if there's just a way to make it more affordable, and vouchers could certainly do that. As far as, and I'm dreading it here because here in Brunswick we are trying to get a transit system up and going, and everybody keeps talking fixed route, fixed route. Well, this is a tourist area, and we have a lot of employees that work in hotels and stuff, but a lot of the hotels literally already provide transportation to their employees because they want to make sure they're going to be at work. So I've told people I don't know that a fixed transit system would ever work here. I would rather see something like a more, not a paratransit system, but a demand response, which is still where it would come door to door and work that way. But it wouldn't just be for people with disabilities. It would be for everybody. But because I just think sometimes with the fixed route system, there are just too many issues and complications. And that's my two cents.
Well, I think that my paratransit works pretty well for me. I get to where I need to be, and it's pretty much curb to curb. They don't have to go out and come to the door for you, but sometimes they're nice and will, and sometimes and they don't have to get out to help you find where you need to be. But sometimes they'll do that, and that to me is a plus, and as far as I'm concerned, because especially if you can't always get to where you need to be by bus or something like that. But the cons are, like Alice, I think, said, is the expense and the public's expense for that. And that's a bad or a minus there. But also the maybe it would be a plus if we could have something like vouchers for cabs and things like that. Or that might be a good thing for the states to have that. But that's my opinion on that.
Well, I see people are jumping in and rushing to respond to this question. Let me take a crack at it, because I think there are actually some interesting ideas involved. Obviously, people have talked about some of the pros of cabs and some of the cons, and probably, for the most part, have covered most of those things. I guess the other con that I would put in is that even though it's illegal in some communities, particularly when we are dealing with immigrant cab drivers, there can often be a problem with transporting a dog guide. Whereas in a paratransit system or in a public transit system, that for the most part is not an issue. And so that is a con in terms of using the taxi system. Paratransit, well, obviously, they can be late. They can not turn up. They can the transportation isn't reliable. You lose any access to spontaneous travel with the paratransit system too, in that you need to make reservations at least a day in advance. And many people actually kind of figure their week out and make reservations maybe once a week. I think the other major disadvantage of a paratransit system is that you have to allow such an immense amount of time to get from point A to point B. And that would be probably something that would be shared with buses. Though with buses, you can be more predictable. With a paratransit system, if you're getting to a place that's time sensitive, let's take an example. I have a meeting that's 10 miles away from here that I have to be at by 11 o'clock. I will generally have to leave no later than 9 to be fairly certain that I'll get there. And on occasions, I've even missed getting there on time because of multi-loading, because of how late they've arrived, because of the idiocy of the routes and the way that they're put together. So there are lots of things that are wrong with paratransit systems, which create cons. I think a major con with the public transit system is that in many communities, the public transit system's drivers aren't well trained to deal with folks with disabilities and to provide them with the assistance that they need. I think that is beginning to change because there is a lot of pressure on public transit systems to become more accessible so that a larger proportion of people with disabilities will in fact want to use them. And one of the things that is beginning to happen in many communities is that they are actually talking in terms of giving people what they're calling conditional access to the paratransit system while travel training happens. They're very careful not to call this orientation mobility, but what travel training essentially means is teaching a blind person, for example, how to get from a particular bus stop where he is allowed off to the specific place that he has to go pretty frequently. One of the pros of the public transit system is if you're lucky enough to have a public transportation system close to you, you can take spontaneous trips. You can suddenly decide, you know, I really want to go to such and such a pub and sit down and get absolutely sloshed tonight, and the hell with it, I'm going. And you simply can't do that with the paratransit system. Obviously, you can do it with a cab system, but that's a good deal more expensive, and I'd be much more inclined to use that when I was coming home, I think. In general, I think what we've demonstrated tonight is that the transportation issue is one that we could probably talk about for weeks on end and not exhaust the possibilities. It's fascinating the range of approaches to providing transportation for people with disabilities that have emerged in various countries. And it's also amazing the degree to which in some communities there's very little transportation available to folks with disabilities and what there is very expensive, while in other communities free transportation is essentially available almost on request. It's a fascinating subject, and one of these days it might be interesting to debate how appropriate these subsidies truly are. But for the moment, let me leave you with tonight's Tuesday topic by saying that I've truly enjoyed moderating this program and learning lots about transportation in various parts of the world. I'd like to thank all of our participants and thank you, the listeners, for tuning in to Tuesday Topics tonight on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community. Next week on Tuesday Topics, we're going to discuss how we as blind people can help sighted people get over their misunderstandings of who we are. Often, people who can see think that a blind person who's actually pretty ordinary has other disabilities, such as deafness or mental issues. How do we persuade people who can see and who have no disabilities to understand us better? And if we have more than one disability, how do we persuade people who can see to interact appropriately with us as well? That's our topic next week on Tuesday Topics on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.